We are talking with Chase Klotzke, and she's on the line from outside Memphis. And she has been the key person, really, for the STAR team, the High-Tech Investigations Unit, Fast Track Unit for MUFON. And she's been busy.
In 50 states, with an organization as popular as MUFON, getting over 500 a month, we're very busy.
now that's for all of the UFO sightings reports, and then the STAR team takes the cream of the crop, so to speak. Well, one of the reasons we wanted you to come on, and we appreciate you coming on with us, is to explain how detailed this is and what the parameters are.
Yes, this program is pretty solid. The first thing I was tasked to do when I accepted the position and offered and accepted the position was to design a program. And I started from nothing. I had nothing. I started on a piece of paper at my kitchen table. I didn't have any information from the last program, and that was okay because so much had changed. The last program was completely different because it was funded. They were paid positions. There was a whole entity that I didn't have. So it wasn't important to me to find out what happened in the last program because most of those issues I wasn't concerned with.
So MUFON didn't steal the BAS program. I mean, you didn't just take it and revamp it.
Not at all. I've never met Mr. Bigelow or talked to him. No, this program is strictly MUFON. And it was, like I said, it was designed with volunteers in mind. There are no paid positions in the STAR team. Everything continues to be grassroots, volunteer. Organizing in our organization our most experienced people and utilizing their talents and identifying at a higher level priority cases.
Chase, if we can, I'd like to get a little more specific about the type of cases that the STAR team, investigates. I mean, what are we talking about? Trace evidence, landings, lights in the sky, abductions?
The STAR team, this is what's great about the STAR team. Having the most experienced and specialized people on board is really very helpful. We have a case in Florida that is producing physical evidence that we're waiting on lab results now before we close it off. I can't wait to reveal this case because it's very, very interesting. A credible witness, several witnesses, several sightings. We have physical evidence. We even have reports of MIB activity where after our investigators, two of Florida's best investigators, we're so thrilled to have them, but it was Morgan Beale and Mary Margaret Zimmer, immediately responded to this scene and effectively and forensically gathered evidence, properly tracked everything, marked it, got it ready to send with a chain of custody to the lab, and in the meantime, effectively interviewed the witnesses and just did an outstanding job. It was reported to us a few days later that the witness had come home and a neighbor had approached him and said that there was a strange vehicle out in front of his house. They weren't sure what to make of it. And upon entering his home and going out in the backyard, he found that the very area that we had investigated had been burned.
Okay, you're not talking about a grass fire here. I mean, you're talking about somebody used a flamethrower or something. They torched it.
We believe through our investigation so far, we're still waiting for lab results to tell us about an accelerant or anything going on. We believe it was a chemical burn, absolutely. It was systematically burned.
Have there been other incidents where a third party shows up and gets involved and,
Yes, there have, which is why there's such a strict confidentiality on the STAR team cases. And I'd like to explain that. This confidentiality has nothing to do with non-disclosure. That's there is no such thing as a non-disclosure form. That's ridiculous. I don't know a single member in MUFON that is in it to keep secrets. I don't know a single investigator in MUFON that would be comfortable even at the idea of keeping silent about what we do. And there is no such form. No such form. However, we do have confidentiality on active cases. And that confidentiality is to protect our witnesses, and it's to protect our investigators, and basically to protect the evidence that we're after. And that's what the confidentiality is actually for. Several times, I don't know any entity out there that investigates, whether it be an industrial investigation, insurance investigation, crime scene, or UFO, where anybody would say, you know, the public does have a right to know, so come on in and everybody take a look around at what happened, and then we'll explain it as we go along. You know, usually any investigator in any situation would like time to effectively investigate what they're doing. We owe that professionalism to our witnesses who trust us and why they give the reports to MUFON. Because we do investigate. Others report. We investigate. So that confidentiality, we have had people show up at our witnesses' homes before we got there. We've had witnesses contacted by other people. So confidentiality is a big, big concern. It's written right into our procedure manual, an exact chain of communication when we're on active cases. But as soon as these cases are closed, we want to tell the world. We'll tell anybody. We want to publish them. It's what we do. So to think that the confidentiality is going to carry over after a case is closed is ridiculous. I also know that MUFON has this rumor about black hole of information, and, you know, I just don't understand that because STAR Team launched October 15th, and in November, December, and January in our journal were two of the biggest cases they had in 2010. I can't wait to put some of the other cases that we're working on, but we need that time. MUFON is a scientific organization. So you can imagine, as a scientific organization, us putting out data without backing it up with the very tool to us. Does that make sense? You know, and Jerry, I don't know any investigator out there that would be happy and satisfied to even consider something like that. That's not what we do. All the investigators and members I know, or even other ufologists that may not even be with MUFON, we all want the same thing. We want the truth, and we want it out there, and we want to know what the government knows. We want to know what other government knows. You know, people, let us know. We want full disclosure.
Okay, that's a good explanation, and I get that explanation from the police departments and from the military and from all investigators. And as a journalist, of course, my object is to get the story as quickly as possible.
Right, and we understand that people want to know, and that's what we do. We just really want the time to let our labs do what they do so that, as a scientific organization, our evidence and the case results that we have can absolutely withstand public and scientific scrutiny, because they are going to be scrutinized. You know, our photo analysis specialist is amazing, and, you know, he knows that when he puts this photo out and verifies, yes, this is authentic and I don't know what it is and I can't explain it, that there's probably going to be 500 other people that grab that photo and try to do the same thing. So we have to be specific, especially with the reputation of MUFON being over 40 years of a scientific organization. We have to be that good.
I'm still curious about the specifics of the cases that MUFON investigates. I mean, what kind of cases are we talking about? Are there lots of reports of ETs walking around, or is that a pretty rare report? I mean, what kind of cases are we talking
there,
about?
Anything that yields trace evidence, physical effects, you know, and of course, physical effects could even be your abductions. Right now we have an abductee in Indiana that we're working with, and he has documented family history as an experiencer. His family has passed lie detector tests, physical exams, psychological evaluations, and right now we're currently in the process of regression therapy and, you know, documenting all the missing time and even some of the physical effects on such things as his vehicle. So, you know, that's a very big case. It's very intricate. We're finalizing some of this, but, you know, it's ongoing.
And this abduction case, was he harmed physically?
That we're not sure of.
Okay.
The regression therapy is ongoing. And we will definitely be able to do more.
Get away from the specifics of this individual case and talk about abductions, period. I mean, what's going on there? Are the abductees being harmed or examined, or is it scientific or what? What do you think it is?
The sense I'm getting in the cases that I am specifically involved in, it appears to be more information. The abductees are claiming more information, more connections to claimed hybrids, you know, things like that. It seems to be more informational that we're getting at this point and not so much physical examinations and experiments. I haven't gotten too much of that.
You know, Chase, we're always talking about government disclosure of UFOs and ETs. I've often wondered, why not the ETs just come to MUFON? You guys investigate them all the time.
That would be
they
wonderful.
Know about you, I'm sure.
You're absolutely right, and these are questions we discuss among ourselves as well.
I mean, when did they come to me? I'd love to interview one. Put them right on the air.
And to tell you the truth, I kind of would rather them come to us first, if you know what I mean.
I've never had one come into my room at night when I'm asleep.
Not that I'm aware of. That is Star Team's mission, is to basically get that evidence. When you were talking about some of the cases that we don't necessarily work a lot of lights in the sky. And sometimes people look at these cases as less than. They're not always your most exciting cases, but they are extremely important in MUFON and should always be taken just as seriously as anything else. Lights in the Sky reports reveal a plethora of information, as to hot spots. We're also trying to figure out, how did they get here? How do they work? How do they move? Which is why some of the talent that we incorporate in MUFON are our, you know, physicists and scientists and, you know, that seems to be as much of a membership boom as you know, people like me, regular field investigators that just have a love for ufology and now have time to invest. So, you know, the professionals, I guess, are the ones that are really, really taking a big interest in getting involved.
Chase, these MUFON shows have generated lots of email, lots of responses. And one thing I've noticed is a lot of people, and I've been doing UFO shows for decades, and you've been, and everybody in MUFON's been investigating things for a long time, and some people are questioning the objectivity of us simply because we've seen a lot of evidence that makes us think there's something to it. I mean, you can be objective without being skeptical.
Right, and to be honest with you, a healthy dose of skepticism is exactly what we're looking for.
I'm pretty agnostic about it all.
Right. I mean, if you walk in and you know, for every person that says, you know, I feel like I was coming home from work and it took me 4 hours, it's a 20-minute trip, I don't know what happened, and you're rolling your eyes, we don't want you. You know, that's just ridiculous. We're looking for the truth. Now, whether that's UFOs, aliens were being visited, something else may be going on. Our mission is the truth, and which is why when we chase 100 cases, you know, 99 of them, you know, turn out really nothing significant that we can put out and report that we haven't done a million times already. But at the same time, a healthy dose of skepticism, we have to maintain that investigator mode. We have to ask the questions. We have to ask them again. We have to ask them a third time in an open-ended questioning session. We have to look for the evidence. If you're not finding evidence ever, or not getting good cases in your state ever, you know, you might want to retrain some of your FIs to go ahead and go out there. That big case that we had in Tennessee started out as a light in the sky case. It was a Category 1. And, you know, as I interviewed the witness, he appeared more and more credible. I kept asking questions. He was making some pretty extraordinary claims. Orange fireballs, red and white lights in the sky every night. He did report three lights. He never said to me a triangle until we met him. But these were extraordinary claims. And, you know, so my next step was, well, why this area? What's going on? So as I, you know, did the satellite research, I realized it's very rural. We did the soil compound. I found out that we have a sacred site very close to the incident, which are the Pinson Mounds. Very, very sacred site. It's an archaeological park now. We found military bases close enough to have an interest, but far enough away that it wasn't probably something from that. We found ley lines intersecting exactly where some of this activity is going on. So now, as an investigator, it's making more sense to me all the different types of claims. Versus just a light in the sky. We have to do our job as investigators. We have to take it to the next level and even think out of the box. I contacted the Historical Society because the newspaper wasn't responding. I talked to law enforcement officers out there, and although he was a little tongue-in-cheek, he kind of sat back and was a little intrigued and actually wanted to know exactly where I was investigating in his county.
Yeah.
And, of course, he didn't get that information. But I called the Historical Society because, you know, historians know the events and past, and I was curious to find out if, you know, they knew of any legends even, you know, Mothman, you know, things that, you know, kids grow up on or towns talk about, especially these small towns, that might have this witness automatically assume extraterrestrials. So, you know, to kind of think out of the box and just go for it. And then what I found was, if, you know, if these things were coming in and all these different types of crafts, it actually made more sense, according to the research and theory in ufology, it actually made more sense here than anywhere else. So, you know, that was interesting.
Over the years in doing these UFO shows, you come to some conclusions or ideas, at least. And Native American burial grounds, there seem to be, you know, there seems to be a connection. Another thing is quartz deposits. Have you ever examined that aspect?
We do. And that is why I did take the soil compositions and studied the makeup of what was underneath top layers. We do. And when I saw that, when the Pinson Mounds, which I'm not native to Tennessee, I was quite startled to find that. However, it's huge. You know, it's a huge tourist place, an archaeological park. But it just, that made a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. It was.
Another common denominator is fresh water. A lot of these things seem to happen around freshwater areas. Maybe they're taking on water. I don't know.
Well, there's a great book out there written by one of our field investigators called UFOs in Water, and it's probably the most comprehensive. It's taken off of eyewitness testimony years of research. It's an amazing book. And, you know, and of course my husband's a submariner, so UFOs are, I'm very fascinated with UFOs in water.
Yeah, I wonder if he's seen any of those undersea bases we hear about.
I'll tell you.
And I don't want to get him in trouble here.
He doesn't
but...
talk about his job, that, you know, I ask, and no, he's just nope. Kind of looks at me.
Okay. We don't want to get him in trouble, but I'd sure like to know.
You know, we're looking forward to being able to explore this more, and, you know, hopefully he'll retire soon. I'm counting the days and tapping my fingers for it, but that'll be awesome. And he's very interested, too. He would love to do this. He would love
to do
this.
As long as we're talking about the government and the military and all of that, and you mentioned the thing where they burn the evidence in the backyard with a chemical fire down in Florida, and we get reports of this all the time, of possible government interference. What's the deal? I mean, why do they want to cover it up, you think?
I, you know, again, that's a question that
I mean, I don't want to get you in trouble here.
Involved in trying to answer as anything else. It's, I believe that they probably have a lot to lose. Especially, you know, credibility. I mean, who trusts the government? You know, so now to come out and say, well, okay, yes, we have known this for years and years, and yes, okay, that did happen. You know, the government has absolutely no win in coming out, unfortunately. When we do give them that win, I'm sure that, you know, someday we can convince them to disclose information.
True, Chase. The cover-up of the cover-up of the cover-up always gets you in deeper. Plus, I've known a lot of these people over the years, and a lot of them, you know, you got to know, you got to be in a position to know, a need to know. And so I'm not sure everyone knows. You know what I mean?
Well, and, you know, that's kind of how secret organizations work. You know, you don't tell the left hand what the right hand is doing. You know, we know, for instance, you know, in Area 51 or Dugway, or, you know, you may sit next to the guy on the bus every day as you go and take your Janus Air flight and, you know, talk very civilly and get to know each other, but you don't know where he works, you don't know what he does, and you're not allowed to talk about it. And a lot of, you know, governments have to run that way. It's how you secure information. So if you want to keep a secret, you don't tell 10 people.
I'm not sure the government needs all those secrets. Who's the enemy? Especially in the UFO question, who is the enemy? But that's another question.
Right, that is an excellent question, and, you know, every ufologist is anxious for that answer. You know, who is our enemy? Why? Why keep it secret?
Well, yeah, you know, something may be nefarious. I mean, why are we keeping it such a big damn secret? I mean, I sometimes wonder if the ETs are up to any good. Maybe there's a group that isn't. What do you think?
I don't.
Have you seen any evidence of that?
I don't see any evidence of that. The evidence, I have to look back on what I've personally investigated and witnessed, and it just seems to be no different than our behavior when we come across, you know, a place we haven't gone to in the rainforest, where we want to examine, you know, the living creatures and how they work and how they colonize and, you know, are they hive-minded. You know, we study them, and, you know, eventually as humans we'll take an experiment. My experience is more towards observation, study. You know, I'm not so sure. I know all the movies coming out, which is kind of good for MUFON, because pop culture has an influence on our membership.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
In the 80s, when we had like 6,000 members, you know, the height of E.T. and Close Encounters and all these great movies and TV shows, V, and, you know, and then, of course, we had another surge with the X-Files. So I'm actually looking forward to all these movies coming out. MUFON membership has fluctuated up and down with pop culture, and the popularity of UFOs and the interest in society in them. However, the one thing that has never gone down are our field investigators. That number has never declined. So, you know, that's something we think about, but it'll be interesting because Hollywood puts out, you know, bad aliens, you know, aliens versus humans, alien versus predators, you know. So they have a very different message. And, you know, that's curious.
Well, I think it's more than curious. I think somebody out there doesn't want us to know something. But speaking of secrets, let's get back to MUFON. There's no secrets about the STAR team with the state directors, right?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, the non-disclosure fantasy agreement is, you know, ridiculous. Like I said, Jerry, and you must know a lot of MUFON people. Do you know anybody that would sign something like that, let alone come up with that idea? Also, it's probably important to know that the state directors themselves are responsible for reporting activity to headquarters and to their membership. I mean, you know, if for example, you know, Colorado had 50 cases in the last 90 days, where are they? Who's responsible for putting that information out? Well, that's the state director. You know, our international director certainly couldn't call 50 states and state directors and field investigators, you know, every week to find out where they are in cases. You know, it's clearly outlined in the state director's manual that they are personally responsible for the disclosure of their own cases, for their own reporting. And when they have something, they need to put it out there. We couldn't call every state director every month and say, hey, you guys got anything for me? You know, it's very clearly outlined in their manual what the responsibilities are. They're also responsible for recruiting their membership in their states. And, you know, so sometimes I'm a little disheartened when I hear, well, MUFON's losing membership. Well, whose fault is that? Whose responsibility is this? Well, it falls back on the state directors. Now, with that said, that kind of sounds negative. That's how important our state directors are and why we treat them with such respect and pay a lot of attention to, you know, what they're doing and what they need is because they are the direct line, absolutely, between a national organization, an international organization, and where I come from not too long ago, the FI in the field that's standing there with the field manual, a MUFON equipment bag, big eyes wanting to go on investigations. So it's very important what they do, and they need to do it right, and they need to do it in a conscious and effective way for the betterment of our organization and the very people they serve.
Okay, secondly, as soon as the case is closed, as soon as the investigation's over, it's open to the public.
Absolutely.
You don't have some cases that have been hanging around for years and somebody's hiding them.
Not that I know of.
Okay.
You know, like I said, we put, since October as STAR team manager, I've had two of the biggest cases in MUFON in the journal. And we've been all over, you know, radio interviews and putting this information out. So, no, that's not my experience at all. Not at all.
You don't have any negativity about MUFON. You're positive about MUFON, right?
MUFON. I'll be honest with you, Jerry. I put in, without exaggerating, easily 60 to 70 hours a week. I wouldn't put that kind of time, money, effort, even a little risking, you know, ridicule in my own community, which I have not experienced. I have half expected a knock on my door, which we have not gotten. You know, I wouldn't risk all this for an organization that I thought was not full on and truthful and open. It's just not my experience, Jerry. It
okay.
really isn't.
Any closing comment?
Just thank you so much for, you know, getting the message out there and having us and caring enough about what the truth is. And that really is what we are. We're truth seekers. We're ufologists, and we are MUFON, and I would like to invite anybody to, you know, please ask us questions. If you have a question with the STAR team, call me. Ask me. We're on Facebook. Just, you know, search out STAR Team Project. We're, you know, all our information, all my information's out there. So please contact me, ask me questions, and we will respond. We'll give you every honest answer. But watch us walk our talk. That's what's going to show where MUFON stands. We are walking our talk.
Thank you very much, Chase.
You're welcome. Thank you.